From today, we leave the description of the transducers related to the kinematics and to the movements of an object, and we start to see other sensors that are devoted to different measurements and to different physical magnitudes. The first of them is the so-called strain gauge. That is a transducer devoted to the measurement of forces and pressures that can be seen as a strip applied to an area, to a surface, that undergoes two deformations. Again, we can say that in this case we have another aspect that can be seen of the piezo-resistive effect. That is, a mechanical action causes modification into the electric characteristics of a material, in particular to the value of its own resistance, and this modification can be transformed into a voltage that can be measured by a microprocessor. We start from the second Ohm law, as shown in the slide 61, that says that the resistance of a material is given by the resistivity times the length of the material divided by the section of the, in this case, of the wire that is characterized by the resistance R. So if we exert a mechanical action on a certain kind of material that is characterized by such a kind of equation, for example stretching, we will have a variation into the value of the resistance. We call this variation delta R, and we can express this variation with the following expression, with the following formula. Delta R is equal to the ratio between the resistivity and the section of this material multiplied by the variation of the length plus the length divided by, again, the section, and multiplied by the resistivity, the variation of the resistivity, minus the product of the resistivity times the length divided the square of the section value multiplied by the variation of the section itself. This expression basically applies a certain superposition effect principle to the components of which the resistance is made. That is, the stretching causes a variation into the resistance value, and this can be expressed as the sum of the variations of the length L, the resistivity rho, and the section A, each one taken separately. That is, we consider the effect of the stretching on the length and its own variation, delta L, with the resistivity and the section considered fixed. And then on the section, considering the other two components as they remain fixed, and finally considering the variation as exerting an influence on the resistivity but taking the length and the section unchanged. This explains the structure of the equation, but doesn't explain the reason why we have all these terms. First of all, we have rho divided by A multiplied by delta L. This is reasonable because if we stretch a wire or a conductive material, We extend its length, and clearly we ask to the electronic charge to run on a road that is extended. This implies, this requires more energy and can be seen as an increment in the resistance, that is the opposition to the passage of the current of the electronic charges. And the same consideration can be made for what concerns the second term, that is delta rho, the variation in the resistivity. In fact, if we modify the length of a wire of a conductive material, there is less space for the particles to distribute into the three-dimensional space. This means that both due to the fact that the space is reduced and to the thermal agitation of the particle itself, when the electrons will try to pass to run along the wire, the probability of collisions with those particles belonging to the material that we are using, that are confined into a very tight region, and in that region vibrate due to the thermal agitation, this probability will augment considerably. And we can read such a situation as an increment in the resistivity of the material itself. Moreover, lengthening of the wire will turn out into a reduction of the available section, if of course the volume remains fixed as it is in every solid material, and clearly the passage of the current will be reduced. In fact, the same amount of electron charge must cross an area that in this case has been reduced. In other words, there is a crowd of electrons that should cross a certain section, and clearly this reduces the overall velocity of the electrons themselves. This can be interpreted as an opposition to the passage of the current, and for this reason will affect the increment of the resistance in the overall material. The fact that into the expression this contribute of the variation of the section is introduced as delta A divided by A square is due to the derivative function of 1 on x, that is minus 1 on x square. And the minus sign is due to the fact that if the section diminishes, as it is when we lengthen a wire, the opposition to the passage of the current of the electrons will augment, that is the resistance will be increased. We can define the sensibility of the transducer as the ratio between dr on r divided by dl on l. This is the so-called gauge factor, and expresses the variation in percentage of the resistance with respect to the variation in percentage in the length of the material we have considered. Conceptually, this kind or this definition of sensibility is the same that we gave in the past for other transducers, as the derivative of the electrical magnitude with respect to the physical magnitude. In this case, however, we introduce the concept of percentual variation of the electrical magnitude with respect to the physical one, but the general philosophy is the same. Of course, the sensibility also, in such a case, expresses the capability of the sensor to provide a robust response when the physical phenomenon happens, when the variation that induces a modification in the length takes place, and the sensibility says to us how much and if we will be able to detect this modification through the microprocessor by means of the sensibility of the resolution provided also by the analog to digital converter. This requirement will influence the choice of the materials on which the strain gauge is based, as we will see in the next couple of slides. First of all, let's consider the previous expression delta R equal to rho divided by A delta L plus L divided by A delta rho minus rho L divided by A square time delta A. And let's multiply both the terms of this equation by the quantity L divided by R dL. This is shown in figure 62. After very few mathematical calculation, we obtain an expression into which G, the gauge factor, is equal to the sum of three new terms. The first is the product of the length and the resistivity divided by the product of the section times the resistance value. The second is L squared divided by the product of the section times the resistance multiplied by the variation of the resistivity with respect to the variation of the length. And the third is the ratio between the length and the section multiplied by the variation of the section with respect to the modification in the length. By exploiting the second law of Ohm, that says that the resistance is equal to L divided by A times rho, we immediately notice that the first term in the equation is 1, and the second expresses the relative variation of the resistivity with respect to the relative variation of the length, and the third one corresponds to the relative variation of the section with respect to the relative modification in the length. Now we can make some considerations about the range of the values that the three separate components of the sensitivity can assume. The first one is 1, so no more considerations are necessary because that's the value, and clearly this value will not contribute so much to increase the sensibility of the transducer. Let's see the other two. In particular, let's concentrate on the third one. If we consider the volume of the material that we are using, clearly it can be expressed by the product of the section times the length. And if we lengthen the wire or the material due to the mechanical action we apply to it, clearly the volume will remain at least equal, or more probably will increase, will augment. By modifying, as said in mathematics by parts, such an expression, delta AL is greater than zero, can be transformed in L the A plus A the L greater or at least equal to zero. This derivation by parts is suggested by the idea that again a superposition effects principle can be applied even in this case. From this observation we can deduce that the A on A divided by the L on L, that is the relative variation of the section with respect to the relative variation of the length, is a negative quantity that can be called minus alpha, but this is only a definition. What it is important to notice is that attraction gives a minor section, as the intuition suggests. But this also says to us that the third term will not be a very important contribute into the expression of G, because the equation in figure 16, slide 62, shows that it is positive. On the other hand, it is clear that, as written in slide 63, alpha is less than 1, since when we have a modification of the length of the wire we are considering, a modification in the sense that we increase the length of the wire, the section will diminish, as I said before. So alpha is included between 0 and 1, and the third term in the expression of G will be not so great. So to augment the sensibility of the transducer itself, we have to see what kind of contribute can be given by the rho on rho divided by the L on L. And clearly this depends on the material that we have chosen to carry out the strain gauge. In particular, the experience shows that if we take semiconductor materials, we can have value of the relative resistivity with respect to the relative modification in the length of the wire that is close to 200-300, so increasing significantly the sensibility of the transducer and providing a very robust and a very large voltage in output that can be converted by the analog to digital converter very well and can be read with accuracy by the microprocessor. The only problem that arises in such a case is about the influence of the temperature variations in the response of the transducer, and we will see that this will require to us to use sometimes a couple of strain gauges and to perform a differential measurement so as to eliminate the temperature effects that will influence both the strain gauges, and will be of course eliminated if we have a final output signal that is the difference of the outputs of the two strain gauges themselves. This will ask for including into the conditioning network after the strain gauges a Wheatstone bridge conditioning circuit that will allow to compensate for homologous resistance variations. Typically, strain gauges are mounted on elastic support that of course will not exert any opposition to the deformation, otherwise the measurement, let's say, should be considered as not completely reliable, affordable. And we can measure horizontal and vertical deformation, but also forces, torques, and torsions. Let's see some examples of how a strain gauge can be applied. We are considering slide 64, and you see, for example, in the first figure, in the left upper part of the slide, a strip into which a strain gauge is mounted, like it would be a resistor, or if we can make the comparison, a solenoidal circuit, that is a very shape similar to a serpentine. This means that such a kind of geometric shape will help us to be more sensible to horizontal deformation, because if you consider the portion of the strain gauge that is horizontal horizontally oriented with respect the part of the strain gauge that is vertically oriented, clearly the first ones are the majority. So the overall effect measured by the sensor and transformed into a resistance variation in output will be more sensible to those mechanical actions that will be applied in the arrow sense, in the arrow direction that is horizontal. Of course, if we need to measure a vertical deformation corresponding to a vertical mechanical action applied to an object, we can mount the strain gauge in the opposite direction. We could say, in other words, that if we need to measure a horizontal deformation, the shape of the strain gauge will be more preferably oriented towards a vertical geometry, and vice versa if we have to measure a vertical deformation. If we need to measure both the directions, more conveniently we can mount the two strain gauges as shown in the picture, that is shown in the upper part of slide 64, in the right area, let's say. In the lower part of the same slide, we can appreciate another technique to use and to mount strain gauges. In this case, we need to measure a force, and we take as an example a rifter that is applied to a wall. At one of the edges of the rifter, force is applied, in this case directed downwards, and we can observe that a certain part of the rifter will be lengthened, the upper part, while the lower part of the rifter will be compressed. When I say upper part and the lower part, I have in mind in particular the point into which the rifter is connected, is applied to the wall. So if we will mount two strain gauges, one in that particular point whose length will be augmented, and the other one in the lower part, below, I mean, the rifter, where the compression takes place, that strain gauge will feature a decrement in its length. So we will have one strain gauge whose variation of resistance will be positive, and another strain gauge whose variation will be negative. If you can build an electronic circuit who makes the difference between the output of the first and the second strain gauge, we will have a final expression into which the variation would be twice the resistance variation of only one of the two strain gauges. In slide 65, on the other hand, we can see another application of the same principle to a different physical situation. In this case, we have a shaft that is applied to a wall, to a surface. The shaft undergoes a rotation movement caused by a torque applied to it, and clearly the application point of the shaft to the surface will exert a certain degree of resistance to the rotation, and this resistance will turn out into a torsion. A torsion is a mechanical effect into which a body that should rotate features some parts that are free to rotate and some other parts that instead are less free or cannot definitively rotate. So all the body will have a different distribution in the rotation velocity considering its length. And we can try to measure such a kind of situation to avoid crashes or damages clearly. In this case, we can mount a couple of strain gauges to measure two deformations as it is shown in the figure, in the picture. The two deformations will be due to stretching in one case and shrinking in the other case. So the two values that the strain gauges will provide will be more or less equal as amplitude, but opposite as a sign. Again, we can connect the two electronic sensors to a bridge, to a Wheatstone bridge, that will give in output a voltage proportional to the difference of the voltages of the two strain gauges. And this will increase again the sensibility of the transducer, because we will have an output value that is proportional to two times the delta R variation in every single strain gauge, and moreover will compensate the effect of the temperature, because this effect will be present in the first and in the second strain gauge. So if we make the difference of the overall output, the two temperature dependent effects will be cancelled. Now, we take into consideration another family of transducers that is devoted to a completely different physical magnitude, the temperature. Such a kind of transducers are typically based on a physical effect that is called Seebeck effect, from the name of the scientists who discovered it. We have already said that electrons, in particular, in any case, free charges, can escape due to their thermal agitation from the conduction band where they usually are located. In other words, we are referring to the model of the particles, said Rutherford Bohr, into which we identify a nucleus around which one or more free charges are free to orbit, to let's say rotate, and the movement is along the trajectory that is defined by the law of the physics, but on this trajectory the free charges are characterized also by a vibration that is related to their temperature. The higher the temperature, the larger the amplitude of the vibration, and in some cases this vibration could be as large that the free charges are free to escape from the trajectory, that is, they win the gravitational electronic attraction that take them, that keep them attached, we can say, to the nucleus. These free charges are electrons in metals or in typical conductive materials, are holes in semiconductors. Now we can consider a material, maybe shaped as a rod, so where the longitudinal direction is prevalent, that features different temperatures at its own extremities. So the charges, those charges that are located into one of the two extremities, will have a higher temperature than the other ones. So it is more probable that the hot charges will leave their trajectories than the, let's say, cool ones. Therefore, there is a certain probability that the charges coming from the hot point will diffuse to the area that can be considered cool. Probably there are two fluxes between the two points, but at the end the net difference will be in favor of the point with higher temperature with respect the point with lower temperature. And if the difference between the temperatures in the terminals, in the extremities, is constant, the flux is continuous. Clearly, the diffusion velocity of the hot charges will be greater than the velocity of the cooler ones. And despite the fact that we have two fluxes of free moving charges, it is clear that due to the different diffusion velocity, the net difference will be in favor of those charges that come from the hot point. This has been formalized for the first time by Richardson in the law that takes the name from himself. This means that a charge density will take origin at one of the two extremities greater than in the other one, and this creates an electric field. If we consider the circling of the electric field along the main direction of the conductive material, we will have a voltage that is given by the integral function of the electric field. But clearly, the electric field is due to the difference of temperature that causes a different accumulation of charges in one of the two extremities of the material with respect to the other one. That is, the gradient of the temperature is proportional with a suitable constant to the electric field. So finally, we can demonstrate that the voltage that we can measure at the extremities of the material we are using is given by the integral function of the gradient of the temperature in the line in the direction that is prevalent in the material, and clearly the integral of the gradient is basically proportional to the magnitude that is under the function of integral. So we can say that the voltage is proportional to the temperature, to the difference of temperatures present at the two extremities of the material that we have considered. This is a good starting point for carrying out a sensor that is based on such a physical principle. In the slide 67, a picture is shown that presents a conductive material featuring a circular shape, so we can say that it is closed on itself, characterized by several points along its length at different temperatures. So with different gradients, T1, T2, T3, T4, T5. But the problem is that the two extremities where the voltage can be read are at the same temperature, T1. This means that if T1 is, let's say, lower than T2, T2 may be lower than T3, at a certain point we will have a temperature T4 that must be lower than the previous one, and T5 again lower, just to come back to T1 that of course must be at the same temperature that the other edge of the wire. Clearly, this means that in some parts of the conductive material we have positive gradients of the temperature. In other ones, instead, we will have negative edges, negative gradients of the temperature, and correspondingly, the electric field that will be generated follows the same rule. Some fields will be positive, some fields will be negative, and the overall voltage generated will be null, since at the end we come back at the same temperature that we have at the beginning. And moreover, the material is all the same along all the, let's say, road that the electronic charges will cross. But if we change point of view, if we consider, for example, two materials, of course different, so as the two junctions between the first material and the second one are, for example, at two different temperatures, like shown in the lower right part of the slide. For example, you see that we have a material shown in yellow and another piece of conductive material, of course, shown in green. The first part of the material of the wire is at the temperature T1, and at a certain point we have the junction with the second material, and the other extremity of the second material is at the temperature T2, and in that point we have also the second junction with the material T1, so as to come back to the final edge of the circuit that is at the same temperature as at the beginning. Clearly, we have a gradient that is different from zero, a total gradient that is different from zero, because the first part Of course, is at the same temperature and we don't have gradient. The second part, featuring the two junctions, will have a gradient that will be not compensated by the last part that brings from T2 to T1, but on a different material with respect to the previous one that corresponds to the green material. So the overall sum between the gradient T delta T on the X between T1 and T2 is not cancelled by the negative gradient in temperature that we meet from T2 to T1 crossing the yellow material. And this is, let's say, the secret of the transducer that we have in mind. By joining two different materials, we will have a voltage that will be given by the integral of the electric field generated by the gradients in temperature. And since the two gradients don't compensate, we have a net value in output that will be proportional to the difference of temperatures T2 minus T1. Of course, there are several materials that we can use in nature for such a scope, copper, constantane, nickel, chromium, and so on. But the focus, the point, is to avoid the usage of a circuit made of by the same material, instead to join two different conductive materials just to create a difference that remains proportional to the temperature and can be read at the two edges of the circuit. The real transfer function of such a device that since it is based on the junction between two materials is called a thermocouple, is not completely linear. In the figure in slide 68, we see the relationship between the generated voltage and the temperature, and we see that we have some components. The first one is linear, the second is parabolic, but we have also more contributes that depend on, several greater exponents of the temperature difference between the two points that we are measuring. So from this point of view, this is not a very ideal situation. But we can, in some sense, overcome such a kind of trouble if we use the thermocouple in the range of temperatures into which it can be considered as a line, as with a constant slope curve, This means that even if the range of the thermocouple typically is from 200 degrees up to 2000, so it is very suitable for very high temperatures. For normal usages and to remain in the linear area of the curve, we have to set the range, for example, from minus 2000 up to 2000 degrees, Celsius degrees, of course. The second issue that must be considered is that a thermocouple provides a very interesting response, but the sensibility is not so high, so the signal must be amplified. Moreover, the output is proportional to the difference of temperatures between two points and not to only one point. In other words, a thermocouple cannot be used as a thermometer. This could be a problem in such in some applications, maybe in other ones no, but just to deal with such an issue, The problem can be solved by connecting the thermocouple to a suitable conditioning network, as shown in the right lower part of the slide 68, where we can see the thermocouple represented, let's say, in an equivalent circuit colored in blue and red. So we have the two materials differently colored and located with the junctions located at the two different temperatures T1 and T2. Clearly, the delta V difference at the edges of the thermocouple can be inserted into the input pins of an operational amplifier acting like a differential stage, so making the difference between the two input signals, so as the output is a unique voltage proportional to the delta T difference of temperature. Now, to eliminate one of the two temperatures, we have to add, by means of another operational amplifier, a voltage signal that is related to one of the two temperatures. For example, in the figure, we have made the hypothesis that we want to measure T1, so we have to eliminate the dependence on the temperature T2, and this dependence can be, let's say, cancelled by taking a voltage signal from the output of a diode into which a suitable current is made to pass. We know, and we will see better in another transducer, that there is a dependence of the output voltage in a diode, of the voltage drop, let's say, in a diode, from the temperature of the environment into which it works. And if we calibrate the current that crosses the diode, so as this voltage is in the order of magnitude of the other voltage provided in output by the differential stage, we can say that the final output is T1 minus T2 plus T2, so only T1. Of course, I'm talking about of voltages that will be proportional to the first one, the difference between T1 and T2, and the second one, I mean the one that comes from the diode, proportional only to the T2 temperatures. In this way, we can transform the output of a typical thermocouple into a signal that basically provide an information like it would be a thermometer. This solution is called cool joint or cool junction compensation. To improve the output voltage, to improve in particular its own amplitude, we said that we can amplify the signal itself. A suitable transducer can also be found that basically are made by the sum of one or more thermocouples. These devices are called thermopiles and provide an output temperature, an output voltage that is proportional to the difference of temperatures between two points multiplied by a suitable integer number, by a suitable factor that is related to the number of junctions that we are considering. In other words, looking at the figure shown in slide 69, we can see that in the two points T0, T1, we have not only a junction, each one, but we have or we could have several junctions. In the picture, two junctions per point are shown. that are obtained by successive junctions of the two materials M1 and M2 that you can easily follow in the picture by considering the circuit that is made by those several parts colored in blue or colored in red. If you start from the T0 point in the left extremity, you have a first part blue, then you have a second part red that goes in the T1 point. From that point we have a junction with the blue material and we come back to the T0 temperature. Down there we have another junction with the red material and we go to the point with temperature T1, and here we have a junction, a final junction with the material blue that brings us to the output, to the final part of the device. So in this case we have two junctions and we can demonstrate that the output will be twice in this case with respect the voltage that would be provided by a thermocouple with only one junction. Clearly, such a kind of solution is limited by the connection complexity, so it is not possible to have more than, let's say, between 5 and 10 junctions, because otherwise, from the technical point of view, it will be not possible to carry out a transducer like this. We have both in the case of the thermopiles but also in the case of the thermocouples low impedance circuit, because basically the overall nature of such a kind of transducer is conductive. The currents that typically cross such a kind of circuits are not trivial. We can reach even 1-2 amperes in the thermopile, in the thermopiles. This is the first example. We will see another one in the flow meters of a transducer into which, let's say, some of the energy of the physical phenomenon is taken to allow the transducer to work. In other words, the measurement that we provide is not pure, is not absolutely correspondent to the physical phenomenon, in this case to the difference of temperatures between two points, because some of the energy related to this difference of temperatures is used to perform the movements, the diffusion of the free charges from one extremity to the other of the circuit. In other words, if this effect that is useful for us to perform the measurement, if this effect wouldn't be present, probably we would measure a temperature difference that is a little bit different from what we are really measuring. Probably it will be a little bit higher. Indeed, because we subtract energy to the physical phenomenon. Clearly, this effect is not heavy. We are talking about less than 1%, but we must be aware that it is present and influences somehow the quality of the measurement that we are doing.